guy took everything so personally back then. How can he, back then, how can he choose to do this stuff over our friendship? I thought that, you know, I meant something to this guy. And I was really upset about that. I hope he's okay with that. Lost track of him. And he's a good guy. But anyway, I remember that girlfriend was coming to visit. I have no idea what time I got started, but Al promised me he would let me know when my time was up. So I guess I got started about 15 minutes ago. That girlfriend was coming to visit me, and I remember I was so excited. I was very proud of my little crack house that I was living in. I was 17, and I had my own house, and I was real proud of that fact. And she was coming to visit, and I was just tidying it up and getting ready for it. It's the first time I've seen her in, I guess, a couple of months, and I just remember she walked in the door, and this is just a testament to the type of place I chose to live. She walked in that door, and someone just handed her a substance, and she did what she always did, which was to ingest that substance without looking to see what it was, and she's off to the races. Now, my plan for the evening is we're going to sit down and catch up and see how school is going for her and how my job's working out for her. Her plan for the evening now involves, you know, sitting in the corner for the next 8 or 10 hours looking at her hands. That's what she's going to be doing tonight. And again, I was devastated. How could she do that to me? You know, I had plans for the evening. I've been looking forward to this so much. How could she do this to me? And of course, you know, that's what she needed to do. And it was, she always did that. Why was I so surprised every single time the same thing happened? You know, what was wrong with me? But I don't know. That, like I said, that wasn't the first of the hundreds times something exactly like that happened. But that was it for me. I don't know why that was the last straw. But I couldn't take that anymore, and so I had to break up with her. I got to be completely honest, though, and this is embarrassing to say, but I was scared of her. Her behavior was very erratic. She was not particularly stable. And so, like a real man, I waited until she was back in Tennessee and called her, broke up with her over the phone. And I'm not proud of that, but I got to be honest about it. And she did what I expected. She freaked out, and she had her roommates calling and telling me she's going to hurt herself. You've got to change your mind. You've got to do something. I had no idea how I was able to say no. I think that was God doing for me long before I believed that God would do anything for me. I never said no to anyone for anything. I just, because that's not, a good person just doesn't say no. I remember this recently. There were some strangers. I didn't know them, and I didn't know their friend, but their friend was in jail, and they had the bail money. But because none of them had a driver's license or whatever you have to do to get a bond, they just needed some. These are strangers who are probably sleeping in my house. But I went down there and signed a bond. They had the money, but I signed the bond for this stranger, because that's what a good person would do. Now, fortunately, he showed up for court, but never saw these people again. I wasn't even doing it for their approval. I just thought that's what good people do. That's an idiot suit. That's not what good people do, but that's the sort of thing. So I never said no to anybody about anything. But for some reason, I was able to say no to her, and I said, I can't do this. And she tried to reach me over the next few years. I moved around a lot in my late teens and early 20s, and I was never in the phone book, but she would call my parents 3 o'clock in the morning, and they wouldn't give her my number, but they'd tell me she's calling again. And I never talked to her again. And I mentioned her for a few reasons, but one of those is, about 6 years ago, I found out that several years after we broke up, she did end up killing herself. And I'm so grateful, selfishly, that I had some recovery. that book away, but it seems to be working for Annie, and she's happy, joyous, and free, and so different from the person she talked about in her talk. So we were just going along, and what happened was we went to visit some friends of mine up in Wilmington, North Carolina, near the beach, and it's actually that normal guy that had moved out. We were still friends. Years later, he and his girlfriend were living there, and we went out to eat one night, and this restaurant was also a brewery, and Annie told me she's got a few years of sobriety. She's comfortable being around alcohol, and I'm not going to tell her story here. She'll explain to you why what happened next happened. But we're sitting around, and they bring little shot glasses of beer, as you can see what kind of beer you want to order. I'm not alcoholic. My friends aren't alcoholic, so I've got these little shot glasses, and Annie just reached over. So I don't even think she finished the shot. She just took a sip of that beer. And again, she's given me permission to tell you this, but she had gotten to a point in her recovery where the relationship had become her higher power, too. She had stopped doing the things that she needed to do to maintain her sobriety. And what she was hoping for is that we would say, all right, it's about time that you took a drink. Come on, join us. And then she'd switch over to something else because she never liked beer. But that's not what happened. We all knew she was sober in AA. And he said, what are you doing? Stop that right now. And I didn't know much about AA, but I kind of got that the idea of none, don't drink at all. That's about all I understood. And that was it. It's the most alcohol I've ever seen my wife consume. She put that down and played it off, said, oh, there's no alcohol in the sip, no big deal. I didn't think twice about it. What happened, again, she's given me permission to share this. We got back to Charlotte. She had a new sponsor. She was going through the steps again, and doing a fifth step, and on the way out the door, kind of as an afterthought, she said, oh, a few months ago, a couple months ago, whenever it was, I took a sip of beer. And in response, she said, oh, well, you're going to need to change your sobriety date. Well, the woman that came home from that meeting with her sponsor was not the woman that I fell in love with. The woman that I fell in love with loved Alcoholics Anonymous and loved her sponsor, was full of gratitude for the fellowship and for the program. The woman that came home that day was angry and resentful and just mad about it, and everything changed. And she wasn't drinking, but she was a completely different person, and I had never experienced anything like this. Now, I was used to dealing with active alcoholism, where I could blame it on the drinking. I could blame the behavior on that they were just drunk, they're going to sober up, things are going to... I don't have any experience with this. I didn't know what a dry drunk was. She was nuts. Seemingly overnight, this was a different person. Her behavior, her attitude, everything had changed. And I'm thinking, this is my fault, of course, because it's all about me anyway. But if I hadn't been there, if we hadn't been there with my friend, she wouldn't have taken this drink. And meanwhile, she's going crazy. She's saying things like, if I'm going to pick up a white chip, I'm going to go earn a white chip. And I'm terrified. I am absolutely going out of my mind. How am I going to stop that from happening? How am I going to keep tabs on her at all times to make sure she doesn't really go pick up a drink? And I know that I want to spend the rest of my life with this woman, but not really this woman. This is a different person. And how am I going to live the rest of my life walking on eggshells until I screw up again and she really does get drunk and it's all my fault? And I am absolutely obsessed.
I have gone from, the highest I've ever been in my life down to further down than I had been before. And I'm just nuts. It's the first thing I think about every morning when I get up, the last thing I think about before I go to sleep. I've lived with active alcoholism before. I know I can't do that again. I'm just crazy. I mean, I reached a point where I really couldn't imagine life with the alcoholic, and I couldn't imagine life without the alcoholic. And I was nuts. And I was talking to a friend of hers in AA about all these crazy thoughts. And her friend just said, you know about Al-Anon, right? And I think I probably said something like, yeah, I know about Al-Anon. My view of Al-Anon came from some uninformed members of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where I got my opinion of Al-Anon. And I have never been more sure of anything before or since that I did not need to be in Al-Anon. But you know what? I was desperate. I couldn't go on thinking and feeling every day the way that I was. I think that a lot of us have to have that gift of desperation. I know I did, to just try anything. I mean, I was positive that Al-Anon was not for me. But I thought, I don't know what else to do. I'm going to give this a try because things are crazy at home. I know I'm insane. And so I went to my first Al-Anon meeting. This was in June or July. It was a haze, and nobody told me to write the date down, so I didn't. But it was June or July of 1999. I was 23 years old. I still had a beard down to here and the long hair. And I walked into the Queen City Monday Night Al-Anon Family Group in Charlotte.
And I looked around that room, and it appeared to be about 95% female. The median age appeared to be about 102. And I think I may have offended some people saying that from behind the podium in Charlotte. I want to make it clear that was just my perception. I was 23. I was immature. Everybody looked really old. Everybody looked really female. And I looked around and said, there's no way I can have anything in common with anybody in this room. And you know what? I just knew they were judging me for the way I looked. And of course they weren't. They told me they were glad I was there and I was in the right place. And they loved me and welcomed me with open arms. Nobody ever asked me if I was maybe in the wrong room. And I'm very grateful for that because I was looking for a reason not to come back. I did not want to be here. I was begging you to give me a reason not to come back, and nobody ever would. And I'm very grateful for that today. And I started listening. I was terrified. I was just full of self-centered fear all the time. I couldn't. It handed me something to read. I literally couldn't read it. My hands shook so bad. But I started listening and finding out that I'm not the only person dealing with it. I'm not the only man that feels this way about the woman that he loves. And I really thought I was. I was the only man on earth who felt that way. And so I kept coming back. And this went on for a while. And I was starting to feel a little better. But I kind of hit a plateau. I hadn't gotten a sponsor, and I was coming to meetings. I was going to a lot of meetings, and it was helping. But in the meantime, Annie and I did end up getting married in January 2000. And the first few years of our marriage, we had some really good times, and we had some absolutely horrible times. Even though she wasn't drinking, like I said, we went through just about everything I've heard people describe dealing with active alcoholism in a marriage. And I didn't understand that. I needed to understand about the disease of alcoholism, that the drinking is just one symptom. And if there's alcoholism in the home, there doesn't necessarily need to be alcohol, so there would be a lot of pain and a lot of hurt. And I needed to understand about the disease and what it was that I was dealing with at home so I could stop taking everything so personally and start making some healthy decisions for myself. But for a while there, she was nuts. I mean, she was. She'll tell you that. She was dry. But you know what? I was just as nuts. And I heard that there was only one side of that equation I could do anything about, and that was me. And I better find a way that I can be okay no matter what she does. And that was absolutely impossible when I got down on it. There was no way I was going to be okay unless she got her act together and our relationship healed, and then I would be okay. That was my only hope when I got here. But anyway, like I said, I kind of hit that plateau, and I wasn't feeling any better, and I just kept hearing people talk about the program. And I also want to mention, you know, one of my fears about coming into Al-Anon was that because of what I thought Al-Anon was, I really thought that the woman next to me was going to say something like, hey, you know, and then he got drunk and he ran over the dog and then he crashed the car into the house and then the house burned down and I passed. And I was going to say, hi, I'm Aaron, and my wife took a sip of beer. And I'm really freaking out about it. And they were going to say, get out. You don't qualify. I mean, I really, but she's not drinking. I don't, you know, my parents were alcoholics. I'm really glad I landed in a group of Al-Anon where they weren't talking that much about the alcoholics. They were talking about themselves and their defects of character and how they had found a new way of life, how they could be happy, joyous, and free, like our introduction said, whether or not the alcoholic is still drinking or not. And I'm really grateful for that. But what I kept hearing about was the steps. The fellowship of Al-Anon is wonderful, and I love the fellowship. I love the meetings. But the steps are the program, to me, are the program of recovery. And that if I wanted to take steps, I was going to have to get a sponsor. And I did not want to ask another man to help me. And my fear and arrogance, I help. I don't ask for help. I've been that way my whole life. But I was desperate enough to ask for help. And Tom was in a Tuesday meeting at the club in Charlotte every time I was there. And he had, you know, what I wanted. He had a peace and serenity to him that I wanted. He was always sharing the solution. And one day, with fear and trepidation, I walked up to Tom and I just said, Tom, would you be my sponsor? He said a couple of things, and I'm glad he said, because I stand today. He said, are you willing to do everything that I do to get what I've gotten in this program? And, of course, I had no idea what he was talking about, so I said, yes. And he said, are you willing to pass this on exactly the way it's given to you? And, again, I don't know what he's talking about. I said, yes, Tom, I'm willing to do whatever you do. I want what you got. Will you please take me through the steps and be my sponsor? And he said, I'd be happy to work with you, but I got to tell you, I'm also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that. A lot of our meetings will say we ask members of other anonymous fellowships to maintain their anonymity so that we can keep the focus on Al-Anon. He did. I had no idea that was an AA, and I'm grateful for that today. But at the time, what I thought was there were like 40 people in that meeting. I had to still pick the drunk out of the room. I might point, it would have been really awkward to say, well, never mind, Tom. So I said, I don't know. I said, whatever, Tom. And he said, well, I can only sponsor you the way that I was sponsored. And if you want to do this deal, I'll take you through it. And that's what he did. So let's get started. And I'm grateful for strong sponsorship. He told me what to do and when to do it and how to do it. And I just did what he did. And I thought I'd taken the first step. I knew intellectually that if Annie showed the drink, that there was something I could do to stop her. And she was out of control. Anyway, I knew up here that there was nothing I could do about that. So I thought I'd taken the first step. But he wanted me to take a little bit deeper look at that. He said, this isn't in any of our literature, but it was a helpful tool for me. He had me make a list, as I've heard others sharing all along. It's everything that I was powerless over. And then he had me write down exactly how my life becomes unmanageable when I try to control this. And that was important to me for a few reasons. First of all, I needed to see that I'm powerless over everything that's not me. My attitude, my behavior, my reactions and actions. I also needed to see that my life is not unmanageable because I'm powerless over alcohol and alcoholism. And I think that's what I thought. My life is only unmanageable when I try to control the things that I'm powerless over. And I needed to see that connection between the things I'm powerless over and the unmanageability. I've lived my whole life this delusion that if I love you, obviously I can't be okay unless you're okay. And of course, okay means you're doing everything that I think you ought to be doing and not doing the things I don't think you ought to be doing. And I know I'm not God, but I clearly see the path God has laid out for you. And you're not on it. And it's my job as someone who loves you to get you back on that path very lovingly, because that's what love is. And make sure you stay on that path, and then you're going to be okay, and then we're going to be okay. And if you're not applying my solution to your problem, the only reason I can imagine for that is that I haven't explained it well enough yet. I really can't think of any other reason, because I love you, and obviously I have your best, interest at heart, and so I must not have explained it well enough yet, so I will explain over and over and over and over in slightly different words what it is I'm trying for you to get, and with this delusion that one day, fantasy is the only word for it, that one day the scales will fall from your eyes and the light will shine down from above and you'll say, I get it. I understand what you've been saying all along. You'll apologize for not getting it earlier. That's always part of the fantasy. I'm so sorry. It's so obvious. How could I not see that behavior isn't okay? And then you'll change and then I'll be okay. You know, and to me that sums up the unmanageability of my life, the absolute insanity. That's how I live my whole life. And so that, you know, I needed to see that. I needed to see the true depth of the unmanageability. And are not going to go away on my timetable like anything else. It's going to be on God's time.
It may not be the defect that's killing me at the moment.